Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM System Z Advanced Storage Main Star Training Part 2 conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Colleen Gordon. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Before we get started with the rest of the slides from Part 1, I just wanted to answer a question that came up this morning about the dependency on XE for storage for the TEP-enabled products. I did not answer that question correctly, and we did a little research on the break to find that there is no dependency on XE for storage. So a customer who buys, for example, Advanced Catalog Management will get all of the TEP software in order to enable that that reporting piece. So again, there's no dependency on XE for storage. However, I did find out that if they do have XE for storage, that the product does have an interface into XE for storage, and you can actually get additional information through the product. What that information is, I'm not exactly sure, but if that's something that you're curious about, you can email me, and I will find out for you and send you a response. Okay, we are at slide number 98 of the Part 1 slide deck. We didn't finish this this morning, so we're going to pick up at advanced audit and then continue through the rest of the products this afternoon. On slide 98, we're talking about auditing the HSM environment and why would a customer want to or need to audit the environment. And there's several reasons. The first one is for CDS recovery. We mentioned what the CDSs were this morning. They are the heart and soul of HSM, and they're called the MCDS, the BCDS, and the OCDS. And they contain all of the information about the data that HSM manages. They are regular vSAN data sets, and they, as a vSAN data set, they are subjected to the types of errors that can occur to a vSAN data set. So there are times and there are customers who experience a problem with the CDS that they have to recover from. And the very first thing that you're supposed to do, according to the IBM manual, is audit your environment after a CDS recovery to make sure that your CDSs were recovered successfully. And if you have thousands or hundreds of thousands of errors in your CDSs before the break, and you recover your CDSs and then you audit them and you have hundreds of thousands of errors after the break, are you going to have a very warm and fuzzy feeling that your CDSs were recovered nicely? Probably not. So one of the things that you want to do to prevent that is to keep your CDSs nice and clean ahead of time with advanced audit. That way you know that when you recover your CDSs and maybe you have just a few errors, you know that your CDS recovery was successful. There's other bullets here on the slide, recovery of an ML1 volume, loss of an ML2 tape or a backup tape. These are all reasons why administrators have to run an audit in the environment. We always run into customers that have several tapes in their inventory that fail recycle. Those tapes can never be recycled. They can never be returned to scratch because they have errors on them. There's situations that cause data not to be able to be recalled. The administrator may get around this by recovering it from backup, but why wasn't the data set successfully recalled? Well, there's obviously a CDS error there that needs to be corrected. And then if you take your HSM environment to a DR site and you want to recover it and use it as part of your DR recovery, if your CDSs are full of errors, you would experience the same kind of situation where you have thousands of errors in your CDSs. When you recover it at the DR site, you don't know if those errors are old or new or what's going on. So there's several reasons why customers would want to audit and keep their CDSs clean. Slide 99, these things are more related to DR. I said this morning that I know of a lot of customers who aggressively migrate data, and this is typically a customer who is running out of storage, or you know they have to, they just create a lot of data sets in, on any particular day, and so they push them into migration in order to create more data the following day. And so they are migrating critical production data just as soon as it's created or very soon afterwards. So if HSM is managing these critical files, we want to make sure that we can get that data out of HSM. And then, you know, if I'm migrating data into migration and then I'm utilizing that data later on in processing, I mentioned this morning daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual type processing, again, I need to be able to get that data out of HSM when I'm running those processes. Slide 100, even more reasons for auditing, reclaiming tape. There's several times, several different kinds of errors that occur for data that's on ML2 or backup tape that will cause that tape, again, not to be able to be recycled, and therefore you cannot reclaim it. You cannot get it back into the scratch pool. I see this quite often. I see literally hundreds of tapes that are in this condition. In environments, and a lot of times they have no other active data on the tape, so they're literally empty, but they have a data set in error on them, and they cannot be returned to scratch. Slide 101, why do you need advanced audit? We talked earlier about companies who want to clean their HSM environment, and they try to utilize the HSM audit tool to do so, but that audit runs very, very long. In fact, there's been customers who have reported literally days that they execute the audit and end up having to cancel it because it's interfering with the HSM's processes. So customers want to be able to audit, but they can't, or customers are completely oblivious to the errors in the environment, and they don't audit, and, you know, in their opinions, HSM is just running along peachily. Everybody's happy until somebody complains or somebody's looking for something that they can't get out of HSM, and the storage administrator has to address it. A lot of times we as salespeople and technical salespeople have to bring this to light in the customer's environment. Ask them, you know, when's the last time you successfully audited your HSM environment? Do you do it on a regular basis? If the customer says no, and if the customer says it's been, you know, months, maybe years since I've audited, then that's a good candidate to run an audit in their environment and just show them what's going on in their CDSs. Auditing in the environment and then subsequently having the customer purchase the product so they can fix the errors will fix the issues in the environment that cause data not to be able to be recycled or migrated or recalled. It will clean the environment and reconnect those broken connections within the CDSs that cause those kinds of errors. And then the control data sets can be nice and healthy and clean. And if they do have to do a recovery either on-site because of a broken vSAN file or off-site because of DR, they can be confident that their HSM environment is whole and intact and is going to function properly. Slide 102, just an overview of the features, and again, we'll go through these more in depth as the presentation goes on, but one of the things from a competition perspective is that our audits are very comprehensive, meaning that we audit every aspect of HSM, every available type of error we have an audit for and a fix for. And the other competition doesn't necessarily have that comprehensive reach. So we are the most comprehensive product on the market. We do everything that HSM audit does, the function audit within HSM, and more. And so we by far have the best audit product on the market. Within the last 2 years, have added some automated types of fixes so that if a customer wants to just go ahead and set up a fix that every time this particular audit error occurs, I want you to go ahead and apply this particular type of fix, that's now available in the product. And so basically they don't have to do anything other than run an audit job, and the audit job will audit the environment, and if it finds these types of errors, it will go ahead and execute the fix against it. If the customer would rather look at the types of errors that were produced and then choose the type of fix that they would like to apply to it, then they can do that through the ISPF panel. So they can either take a more manual, let's say conservative approach, or they can take a more aggressive approach and just let the product go ahead and audit and fix at the same time. Slide 103. We audit the MCDS, BCDS, OCDS, verify the contents of all of these CDSs, identify the inconsistencies between the CDSs. I mentioned in this morning's session that there are over 26 records. I think there's either 26 or over 26, I'm not exactly sure, in the CDS. And they all have relationships with one another. A migration record might have a record in the OCDS that says what Volseer it's on, or if it's migrated to ML1, what migration level 1 volume it's on. So these records that are associated with each other all have to be intact in order for a data set to be recalled or, you know, a tape to be recycled and so forth. So we will identify any of these inconsistencies, any of these broken chains in the CDS records. And then we will also reach out to the catalogs in the environment, the ICF catalogs, to say, okay, according to the catalog, this data is supposed to be migrated. Does the MCDS agree with that, yes or no? Because a lot of times we find data that's migrated that's no longer cataloged, or data in the ICF catalog that says it's migrated, but we don't have an MCD record in the MCDS identifying that data set. So we will also check for inconsistencies between the ICF catalogs and HSM, and between the RMM or CA1 tape environment. What does the tape catalog say about the particular Volseers that HSM owns, and HSM, what does HSM think it owns? So we will identify all of those particular types of inconsistencies for you to view and correct. And this is, slide 104 has the main menu for advanced audit. You can audit, again, the CDSs as we talked about, and then HSM owned tape that you know, the tapes that HSM thinks he owns versus the catalog, the tape management system catalog that says whether or not that tape management catalog actually agrees to that. So they're all available on this panel. And on slide 105, this is a snapshot of a screen that is reporting the MCDS errors that were found in the environment, and we report them with a C, a W, a V, or an I at the end of the error number. So if the error number, such as the first line, 11Dog1Charlie, if that error ends with a C, which it does, those are critical types of errors. So these types of errors can cause data not to be recovered, not to be backed up, et cetera. And so this one's saying that the MCD, which is the migration control data set record, entry is not cataloged. So we have a MCD record in the MCDS, but there is no catalog record in the ICF catalog that says that that data set is migrated, and that is a critical error. You can have W's, which are warnings, and there's a few on this panel here. V indicates that there are data sets in error on a particular volume. A volume might have more than one error, might have, you know, 16 different data sets in error on one particular volume, or you might have 16 different volumes that have one error on them, one data set in error. So we provide both the volume information and the data set, particular data set information in the panel. On the next slide, slide 106, this is more detailed information about those errors that we were just looking at, the 1-1, dog 1, Charlie types of errors. I can see the actual data set name, and then I can see information such as this particular data set was in a SDSP, a small data set packing data set, on volume ML1000. There's actually more information available in this panel by scrolling right, but this is just more information for you about those data sets in error. And then on the next panel, 107, these are the types of fixes that come with the product that can be applied to these data sets in error to resolve them. A lot of times, for example, if a data set it has an MCD record in the MCDS, but it's not cataloged, what do you want to do? Do you want to catalog that data set, or do you want to delete it out of the MCDS? So, you know, these are decisions that only the storage administrator will know what to do with, depending on what type of data it is. You know, maybe this is stuff that should have been expired, so they'll just delete the entries out of the MCDS. Or maybe this was a mistake. Maybe somebody made a human error, which caused these data sets to become uncataloged, and they actually want to recatalog those. So those decisions need to be made individually by the customer, and we provide all of the various types of fixes for them to select and fix. Now, on the next slide, slide 108, we're actually building the fix JCL with the fix command. This particular command is a defined non-VSAM. So in this case, what we're doing is we're going to recatalog those data sets that have an MCD record but aren't in the catalog. So we're building the command here to recatalog those files. And this would have to be done manually by the storage administrator without this product, okay, towards every one of those data sets that were in error. I forget how many we had in the list, but let's say there was 100. If I had 100 data sets in this case, in this particular error condition, I would have to code this define non-VSAM command and then repeat that command 99 times and then go in and change the data set name to match the data set that I want to recatalog. All done manually, all subject to human error because I'm typing it manually. So you can see where this product has provided a productivity tool. It automatically creates those fix commands, and all I have to do is review this list, make sure it looks right to me, and then type sub to submit it. Okay, slide 109, auditing tape. HSM provides a command called audit media controls, and this is the command you use to audit errors with data sets on tape. So that's migration level 1, tape, backup tape, and spill tape. This command with the HSM execution, it does the same exact thing for every single tape. It's going to go through and read the entire contents of the tape and then verify the records towards the TTOC. And then, you know, kind of depending on what kind of error, rebuild the records to match the data on the tape to fix the errors. And this entire process can literally take, you know, hours and hours to do. And the fatter the tape, you know, the customers are using really fat tape these days. So the bigger the tape, the density of the tape, the longer this command is going to run. In fact, we have customers, again, reporting that it takes over 24 hours to audit one particular tape. And it might only have one error on that whole entire tape, but the audit media controls process does this. This is the way it fixes it every single solitary time. It doesn't have any intelligence built into it to just isolate that one particular problem, fix it, and fix it in the TTOC. It's going to go through each and every data set on the tape. Okay. one of the problems, going back to slide 109, one of the problems that consistently happen is tapes get into what we call a failed create status. And all of those tapes that are in failed create status have to be audited with audit media controls. Well, how does this happen? On slide 110, the most common problem as far as tapes being in failed create status is somebody forcing HSM down. So they've issued a shutdown command, and at that time, HSM is actually writing out records that it's been keeping in storage to the CDSs, and sometimes, depending on how many of those records have been accumulated over so much time, that could take 10, 15, 20 minutes, and the operators get a little nervous and they get impatient because they've got a time frame that they got to shut down HSM in, and so they force it down. They cancel HSM, which causes those records not to be written out properly, and the tape gets in a failed create status. So if you're in a shop that's shutting down HSM and forcing it down, not letting it come down naturally, you can end up with lots of tapes in fail create status. I just visited a customer that has over 300 tapes in fail create status. Every one of those tapes has to be audited with the audit media controls command. And they're large density tapes, so each tape could take up to 8 hours, 10 hours to audit. So 300 times 10 hours, that's a lot of time. So time is one of the issues here, how long it takes the customer to audit that particular tape. By the way, you can only audit one tape at a time, and while you are running the audit command, you are degrading HSM's performance. So it spends a lot of cycles working on this particular tape that it's auditing and fixing. So other things that it's doing at the same time do suffer from that. CDS backup is held until the audit is complete. And of course, if it's a tape and if it's a physical tape, then it's going to take a physical drive. If it's a virtual tape, it's going to come into cache and displace other information in the virtual tape subsystem's cache while it's working on this particular tape audit. Okay, where are we? All right, I'm on slide 112. This is just a slide that kind of encapsulates what we were talking about how long it takes to audit some of these tapes. This slide is actually old. If you look at the devices on here, it's probably 4 or 5 years old, and there's even bigger tape out there now, higher density tape. So if you can imagine a 3590 taking 3 days to audit, that's going to be a problem. In fact, anything that's multiple hours to audit is going to be a problem for a company, especially if they have hundreds of tapes to audit. We had another customer that had some kind of a CDS problem that caused them to lose records of over 1,000 of their migration level 2 tapes. So they had to, with the audit command, rebuild all of those TTOC entries and entries in the CDSs. And it just was going to take them, they estimated over a year to be able to rebuild all of that information that they lost. They ended up buying our Fast Audit product and were able to do that job in a fraction of the time. So with the audit media controls that is available in the advanced audit, what you get there is a audit process that executes at many times the speed of the traditional HSM audit command. So instead of taking 8 hours to 10 hours to audit a tape, we could audit the entire tape and fix the problems typically within 20 minutes. And this is on the FAT tapes. A lot of times because it's a more sophisticated audit that we built into this, we don't even need to mount the tape to fix it. Remember I told you that the HSM process fixes every type of error in one way. It audits the entire tape and rebuilds the entire tape every single time. A lot of times those errors could be corrected very simply. And so we built it, more sophistication into our product to make those determinations, and sometimes we can fix the problem without ever mounting the tape. If we do mount the tape, we go specifically to that particular area on the tape that is in question, is in discrepancy, and rebuild the TTOC records associated with that and any corresponding records in the CDSs. So we're able to isolate and pinpoint and get it done so much faster than, again, the HSM process that just rebuilds the tape every single time, every single data set on that tape.
Yes,
Wayne asked, is a TTOC a tape table of contents? Yes, it is a tape table of contents, and it is the first record that's written out to the physical ML2 tape or backup tape or spill tape about the contents that's on that tape. And then there's corresponding records in the OCDS that...
This isn't part of the tape label with the tape header. This is after the
This
tape
is an HSM file, yeah. HSM writes this file out, right.
Thank you.
And then on slide 114, the other kinds of tape-oriented errors I mentioned before is HSM could think that it owns particular tapes that if you went out to CA1 or RMM, those tape management software products don't have a record of HSM owning those tapes, or vice versa. RMM says HSM owns this tape, but HSM doesn't know anything about it. So we also do those kinds of comparisons and resolutions so that tapes can be freed into the scratch pool and reused. Or in cases where HSM is supposed to own those tapes, we can rebuild those entries and get that data back.
Are those the only tape management systems you support, CA1 and RMM? Or
the question is, are those the only tape management systems we support? We support CA1, RMM, TLMS, and is there another one?
I'm trying to think of another one. I can't think of one.
I think that's...
Could
be all. Yeah. So, yeah, we support... I think that's all there is, but for some reason I'm thinking of one more. I can't recall what it is. Maybe somebody on the phone will ask that question at the end. Okay, so slide 115, this is a sample of a audit that we ran against tapes and the results of that audit, and it found that we have one tape with a warning. Volume is in failed recycle status, and we have 302 tapes that basically we're just listing the contents of the data sets that are on the tape. So that's another thing that you can do with this product is get a list of all the data sets that are on the particular tape. So, again, it looks just like the product that we looked at earlier. It's an ISPF view, and I can just basically see nicely summarized any of the tape errors that I have in my environment. Fixing these types of errors are just as easy. I mentioned there's two ways of doing it. One is to actually view the errors and then select the fix, have the job built for me, and then submit it. But I can also automatically correct these. The media controls command within advanced audit will allow you to automatically correct the errors as well. And then it's telling you here on this slide where the information about the audit resides, and then you go in and you submit the correction. And here is the panel, page 117, where this is building the command to fix this particular problem on the tape. Now, with with IBM's version of the audit, the customer doesn't actually have to type in these commands because it basically, again, it does the same thing for every kind of error on any tape. It just rebuilds all the entries. So they don't necessarily have to type all of this in. But again, what we're doing is we're auditing it. We're selectively fixing exactly what's wrong, and then we're building the fixed commands and submitting them to HSM. So it's a little different in the way that it works as opposed to the way that HSM does it. But the way we do it, of course, is much faster. So you run the audit, it identifies the errors, and then you run the fix, which is all the fixed commands are generated for you. Okay, and this section talks about the automation that we put into the product. The customer, can then select what kinds of fixes you want to apply to what kinds of audit errors. So, for example, if I said in my shop, if a data set becomes uncataloged but there's an MCD record for it, I just want to delete it, I can set up advanced audit to just do that every single time. So I can put my audit job into production, I can run it once a week, and every time it finds a data set that is not cataloged but has an MCD record, my automated fix that I selected was to delete that entry out of the MCDS. So I can set it up to happen automatically, and I can set it up so that, you know, there's a variety of errors, obviously, that can happen in the MCDS, and I can select what kind of fix I want to apply, not just the example that I used. I can also, on page 120, slide 120, I can selectively choose which high-level qualifiers I want to apply automated fixes to. So let's say I want to apply automated fixes if the data is test data, but I don't want to apply automated fixes if the data is production data. So I can go into a file within Advanced Audit and type in selected high-level qualifiers. So if the data, for example, if the data starts with TEST or T dot something, then go ahead and apply the fix. And if the data set has a high-level qualifier other than what's in that list, do not apply the fix. On slide 121, there's also error threshold monitoring. That's because we can actually, if the particular tape in question has, you know, hundreds and hundreds of errors, and we end up submitting this great big huge command to HSM, we can actually flood the queue with too many commands. So what we've done here is built into the product a threshold, so it only submits so many error corrections at a time, and then we monitor that queue and add more corrections to the queue as the queue goes down and those error corrections are processed. This typically is only applicable if we've got to rebuild the entire tape. It's not the norm situation. But there are situations where customers have accidentally let go of tapes. They did some kind of human error, and HSM said, oh, so you want me to expire all these tape volumes? And the customer goes, oops, that was wrong. I really didn't want to do that. Well, the only way to get that data back is to run an audit media controls in which we rebuild the entire TTOC and also the connections within HSM. And so if there's like 20,000 data sets on that particular tape, we end up building a whole bunch of corrective actions, and then we have to use this feature to monitor the queue. So. And slide 122 is just more information about the error submission monitoring, the queue monitoring that's built into the product. MQFL is actually available both in Advanced Audit and in Advanced Recovery. And what it is it's a little SQL-type language that we wrote that allows customers to do some rather creative reporting, and in fact taking actions as well. And one good example of this, we did a project for Mayo Clinic. They wanted to carve out a particular application out of their BCDS and out of their MCDS, and then they were giving that information along with all the data that they had on primary to a outsourcer. Okay, so they were outsourcing a particular application, but not everything that they had in HSM. So we used this feature within HSM Reporter Manager and in the audit tool to carve out, to literally remove those entries and that data from the CDSs and physically transfer it over to this outsourcer, and then, you know, the HSM environment at Mayo was still intact and fine, but these records, of course, that they wanted to give to the outsourcer, these records about the live data, was just lifted up out of their HSM environment and plucked down into their outsourcing environment. So worked very well, and the only reason why we were able to do it as quickly and easily as we were, because they had millions and millions of records in their CDSs, was using this MQFL feature. It's just a high-speed type of reporting facility where I can go and I can identify particular data that I want, and then, you know, from that output, actually do something with that data. And then in this case, what we were doing was extracting it from one CDS and building it in another. Okay. Slide 125, this talks about the TEP feature in this product. So, again, all of these MainStar, typically branded MainStar products are TEP-enabled. With the advanced backup and recovery, that will be TEP-enabled, I hear, in October. And let's see.
Can you comment on how much or little of the product is TEP-enabled?
This product or the advanced backup and recovery?
Either.
Okay. Wayne is asking me how much of the product is TEP-enabled. Either the advanced audit or the advanced backup and recovery. I don't know much about the advanced backup and recovery. They don't let us see that information until it comes out. But on this product, you can view all the information that, you know, all the information I was showing you in the panels about the errors and so forth. You can view all of that in the TEP. Now, what you can't do that I know of in the TEP, and you know, some of the TEP guys are actually more knowledgeable in here. I don't think you can build the fixes and so forth within the GUI interface. I think you have to use our panels to do that because you actually submit a batch job to fix it. But you will see the results in the TEP. It just doesn't have the interactiveness like you have in the panels.
Display only, you might say.
Wayne said, so it's display only, you might say. To the extent that I know about it, yes. I could be wrong about that. I'm not very familiar with what they can do with the TEP portion of it. But from all of the panels that I've seen, it looks to me like it's just displaying the information and that you don't have the interactiveness. Do you know any differently about that, Doug?
I don't know for sure, but
okay.
I think you're right. I don't think you're not going to be able to generate GCL and submit a fix through this.
Okay, so Doug thinks that I'm right, that you're not going to be able to generate the fixed GCL through this. 128 shows more of the TEP panel, and you're selecting particular entries here, and it's giving you detailed information. 129 has a list of the errors. This is similar to what we looked at in the panels where we actually selected that particular error and it showed us all the data set names of the data in that error category. And there's information in here where I can see the data set name, I can see the create date, date and time stamps, and so forth. And then this is the OCDS audit error panel that's displaying the errors that it found. You can see six critical errors down there under the 4012 Charlie. Again, the C meaning it's a critical type of error. It says the tape is not full and will not be selected for recycle. So in this case, these six tapes were not marked full. And there needs to be an HSM command executed towards those false sears to mark them full so that they can be recycled. And that's one of the fixes that we would supply in the panels to fix that particular air condition. On 131, we've got more of the OCDS audit, and we have two more critical errors. Tape is in the TTOC, but not in the MCV-MCT, and tape is in the TTOC, is not in the TTOC or the MCV-MCT, the MCV-MCT record being a CDS record in the OCDS, but the tape has physical entries on it. So, again, these are disconnects between the OCDS and the TTOC on the tape that need to be corrected, and those are corrected with audit media controls. So the benefits here, we've got full audit of the control data set environment and all of the physical tapes, so ML1, backup, spill tapes. We can audit all of them. We can identify the errors. We can let the customer choose what kind of fix they want to apply to those errors. We can also let the customer automate some of the fixes for the errors depending on their level of confidence, let's say, with the product and also with how they want errors to be resolved in their environment. We have threshold monitoring so we don't flood the queue with more fixed commands than HSM can handle at any one time. And on slide 133, we obviously have the advantage of being able to audit very quickly over the HSM product. One of the questions you might get from a customer is, well, why do I need this product? I have audit capability with HSM. Well, sure you do, but it's going to take you hours and hours. It might even take you days and days to do what we can do in a very short period of time. And what is the likelihood of your storage administrators wanting to spend days and days doing something? They're just not going to do it. And that's what happens most of the time is they just don't fix the errors because it takes too long to do it. So if you had a tool where you could get it done very quickly, imagine that storage administrators are going to want to use the tool. They're going to want to audit their HSM environment and keep it clean because it's very easy to do. 134, is it important to audit regularly? Yes, it is, for those reasons that we talked about at the beginning of this presentation. What if you need to recover a CDS? Most of the time, CDSs are recovered at the DR site. The customer does use data that's managed by HSM for disaster recovery. Again, those weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual types of files that will be used in processing. Sometimes customers migrate data rather aggressively, sometimes as soon as it's created, so there is critical production data in HSM, and the customers need to get it back. Okay, so now we will open up the phone lines for questions.
And if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment.
I knew there was enough.
And once again, that's star and then 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment. And we have no questions at this time.
Okay.
Do we want to say control tape?
Doug remembered the other catalog management product. There's, control T, and then there's Zara, that from Zeke, Zach, and Zeb, and Zara. And actually, I don't know if Control-T is supported, but I do believe Zara is.
Okay.
So if somebody wants to know the answer to that, just send me that question and I'll ask the product manager. Okay, no questions about the fast audit piece, so let's move on. I've got to switch over here to part two.
Second presentation.
Yep. Oh, that's wrong. Okay, so at home, switch over in your slide deck to the second set of slides, and we're going to start out with the advanced catalog management. Slide two has the agenda. We're basically going to go through all of the various features of this product. Now, I don't have time. We don't have time in a whole eight-hour day to talk about what all of this stuff does. So what I tried to do is just include for you, you know, a slide about all the different types of features, the major features of the product. I may not cover certain sections all that well, but I do believe that there's a notes provided in the slides. If you do a view notes, you'll see the notes, and you can read those. And if there's particular commands that you're most interested in that I didn't cover in great length, you can read the notes on those, or you can send me an email about that. Slide three is kind of an overview. It just has a list of all the key features of the product. Key features being one of the things that we tried to do with this product is keep the command structure very easy and very consistent. It's very much like IDCAMS, which is what folks without a catalog management product use today to do catalog management. And the reason why we were so particular about the syntax was because one of the competitors, which is EMC's catalog solution, was around for a long time, many years, and they had a command set in which they kind of built other commands on top of that original command set, and it ended up being really kind of clumsy and hard to use. So it was important when we were developing this product that we had a really easy to use and a consistent command structure. We have full support for the coupling facility, for fully shared ICF catalogs between systems. We support VVDS mode and ECS mode data sharing between the systems. We wanted this product to be very easy to use and implement, and one of the things that we did to ensure that was to build ISPF panels within the product that would allow customers to generate JCL and submit them and so forth. And these were things, again, that weren't available with Catalog Solution. You can install this product in two ways, SMPE or just with IEB copy, the supplied jobs to just copy libraries over. And there is an IVP available, so if you have a customer who wants to evaluate this product and they want to install it, they can just run the IVP and it will test out the major functions of the product. I mentioned slide four. I mentioned the ISPF interface, but you know this was something that we felt very strongly about building for the catalog management product. This we were the first catalog management software vendor to build in ISPF panels. The other vendors quickly followed, as you can imagine. But I don't think I still don't think there's anything in Catalog Solution like this. But anyway, it's just to make it really easy to use. Well, one of the things that we found is that a lot of the skill set in the ZOS environment, especially from a catalog management perspective, is retiring. And companies are left with nobody that really knows that much about catalogs. And because they are a critical structure, you know, we talked before about them being a single point of failure, people get a little nervous about working with catalogs. And so we built into our product the ISPF feature and also simulate commands. So I could simulate what I was about to do and look at the results of that command before I actually executed it. So I could be much more confident about what I was doing, like if I was doing a merge CAD or something like that. I could see what the actual results were going to be before I actually executed that command. So we did these kinds of things, again, for that that skill set. Okay, so on slide five, we talk about backup. I mentioned this morning that the main reason why customers buy a catalog management product is for its backup and forward recovery capability. So one of the things that backup in the backup area that we had to do, number one, to compete and make it as easy as possible for customers, is provide a masking capability. So What you're seeing here in this command is a way with just these two control statements to back up every catalog in the shop. Okay? All I have to say is backup BCS asterisk asterisk, and our product will go out and find every single solitary catalog connected to the master catalog and back it up with this one command. Okay? So that's really easy syntax. Now, that doesn't mean that that's what all the customers are going to want to do, but you certainly can use it this way. And it does provide for things like synchronization. Let's say I want to do a catalog backup of my data at a particular point in time so that when I recover that at the recovery site, you know, I have all of my catalogs at a consistent point in time. So it's certainly a good thing to do for certain reasons, but, you know, doesn't mean that all customers are going to use it this way. So I can put individual catalog names in there. I can put, for example, ucat.asterisk, and I might have other catalogs that have a different high-level qualifier in there, or I can say just asterisk, back up everything in the environment. All of the backup data is written to a single output file, so I don't have like 23 different files on this tape for each and every catalog. All the backup for every catalog that's included in that asterisk command is written to one output file. We automatically back up all of the aliases from the master catalog, and the catalog itself, the BCS, its definition parameters, we back those up as well. And when we perform our backup, unlike IDCAMS, we back up from the data component only. In other words, we're not going through the index in order to do the backup. And this is important if you have a broken index on a catalog, which, you know, again, these are just VSAM structures. And they do get broken from time to time, and the index is something that if you have a broken index, you might not know about it right away because you can actually read particular data set entries through the index individually, but if you attempted to read that index sequentially is when you would run into the problem. And that's, by the way, that's what IDCAMS does when it with its backup. It will, you know, back up the whole catalog, and you would never know that there is a index error with that backup. We will tell you about it, but we will also back up the catalog from the data component, so we get every piece of that catalog, even if the index is broken. Okay, slide six. Alternatively, you can have us perform an IDCAMS examine on the catalog and or a diagnose on the catalog at the point of backup. We do generally recommend examine every time you do a catalog backup, but the diagnose is usually something that is done maybe once a month or occasionally because it does take a little bit more time for that to execute. We do have an EXCP mode backup. If you have a damaged catalog and you don't have a good backup of it, you can use our EXCP mode backup to back up you know, the catalog and recover it. And one of the things that we do that some of the other catalog management products like Catalog Solution didn't do is correctly handle spanned records in that catalog. Again, these are things that Catalog Solution wasn't very good at that we improved it in our product. We provide a detailed summary report of the backup. Again, we have that simulation command, and that would be handy, for example, with this EXCP mode backup, or if I wanted to back up and recover a catalog to a new name or to a new volume, and I wanted to make sure that I coded the backup command correctly and it was going to go where I wanted it to go, I could run it in simulate mode. I can also back it up with a parallel keyword. I mentioned that I can back up my catalogs with an asterisk. Well, for the most part, that would be a sequential one-at-a-time type of backup. But we do have a parallel keyword that allows you to indicate that you want to back up from 2 to 16 catalogs concurrently. And so this would be a performance issue. So, you know, if you had like 100 catalogs in your shop and you coded it asterisk, asterisk, you could subtask that to 16, and we'd be backing up 16 catalogs concurrently at a time. Okay, and here is some, slide 7, here are some examples of the timing versus ID cams. And we've got 12 production catalogs. Export took a minute, 5 seconds, and ACM took 33 seconds. 38 catalogs. Backup without parallel took 8 minutes and 48 seconds. And with the parallel command took half the time, for 4 minutes and 23 seconds. So, you know, obviously there's a time advantage here. Now, and, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, what difference does it make between a minute and 33 seconds? Well, if you have a lot of catalogs to back up, it's going to make a difference overall. And the other thing is that you want your catalog backup to occur as quickly as possible so that you have as little fuzziness in the catalog as possible. Catalogs are being backed or being updated all the time with new entries. And so anytime you take a backup with a catalog that is live, you're going to have some fuzziness associated with that backup. So the faster the backup runs, the less fuzzy it is. Hopefully everybody knows what I mean by fuzzy. Okay, recover. I mentioned this before. One of the things that differentiates us from the competition is that our recover is a one-step function. And why is this important? Because when you have a catalog down and you have an application out, you know, maybe it's your DB2 or Kix application or a major production application, batch application that runs at night, you don't want to have to take a long time recovering a catalog. So the less steps and the faster that procedure and the easier it is to get done, the better. So we have a really easy recovery command here, and it's a single step, so it's easier to use than any of the other products on the market. We forward recover, of course, using SMS data, and then of course in the job that we provide you, we would delete and redefine the catalog. You would point us to the SMS data to extract, to forward recover the catalog. And, again, we have Simulate here, so if you've never done a backup and forward recovery on a catalog before, you know, I wouldn't test it out while the catalog is down, but you certainly can do it any other day of the week against a real-life catalog using the Simulate command so that you can see what the process is. You can actually train people in your environment on how to recover a catalog if one goes down. And then, you know, your level of confidence with recovering a catalog when that production problem happens is much higher. We also will remove embed and replicate if they are found to be present. Embed and replicate are two ID cams, components of a define command that are no longer supported. I forget how long ago, it might have been 1.7 or 1.6 where they dropped support on embed and replicate, which means that they have to be removed from both catalogs and VSAM data sets before IBM dropped support on them altogether. And I just don't remember. Is that 1.7 that they said they were going to do that? Or? Okay. Janet knows that better, but so what companies have had to do is go through and remove and redefine their VSAM files and their catalogs to remove these attributes. Recover with changes. Sometimes customers, all they want to do is move a catalog or rename a catalog or make catalog bigger. And so they can do a backup and a restore with this command, and they can change all of the different kinds of things that are on this panel here. Slide 10 talks about the selective recovery feature. This is sometimes used in DR recovery, where I want to recover the catalog, and maybe I want to recover just the tape entries or just the GDG entries, but I'm actually going to repopulate my catalog during recovery. I'm going to recatalog everything when I recover data at the DR site. And so customers have that ability to do that with this command. They can selectively recover pieces or elements of the catalog instead of all of it. Slide 11, we will also do a backup and forward recovery on VVDSs. This hasn't been such a big deal, I think, as catalog backup and recovery, but we did have a major customer actually in Germany that ended up losing some of their volumes in the DB2 storage group, and I'm not exactly sure of the circumstances, but they were DB2 data sets and they were span data sets. So pieces of those data sets were on this volume that they had a problem with, and other pieces were on other volumes. So the only way to recover a VVDS is to recover an entire volume. So not only did they have to recover this volume, but they had to recover all of the volumes that had associated pieces of data sets on it. So it ended up being a huge recovery just because of one broken VVDS. So it is worth it, I believe, to back up, have a VVDS backup and forward recovery facility. It doesn't cost you anything. It's very quick to back up VVDSs, very fast to do that. So you might as well be safe than sorry. Slide 12, vSAN dataset backup. So not only will we back up and restore catalogs, we'll back up and restore regular vSAM data sets as well. Customers have bought products in the past just to do this function. They'll come to me. There's two products right now that are pretty popular that customers bought years ago and still are using today and want to get rid of. And we can replace those products with this feature. So we will do backup for regular vSAM and recover. One of them, I'll think about it. It'll come to me in the shower. Okay, recover. So, again, I can recover to a new data set name. I can put in new space parameters. I can change the CICA free space. I can move the catalog to a new Vault SEER. I can put it under a different SMS class, all of those kinds of things, remove, embed, and replicate, and I have the simulate command. Slide 14 is the reorg command. Now, catalogs do need to be reorganized from time to time, especially if the customer has a product in-house that creates a situation that we call the creeping key. One of those products is RMDS. RMDS creates data sets that's a reporting facility from IBM. And each one of the reports is a separate vSAM data set, and part of the data set name is a date and a timestamp. So every time a report is created, it increments the date and the time. And so that what that does is, yes, CA favor, very good. There's one more from EMC. So what it does is it creates a situation where your catalog is always growing. You know, you're always creating these data sets with later date and time stamps, and the ones behind it are getting deleted. So a reorganization is necessary to reclaim back that space in the catalog. So what we've done here is we've created a reorg command that you can actually run while the catalog is open and active. Okay, so no longer do you have to stop vSAM assist, that's right. So Doug got the names of these that I could not remember. CA favor and EMC's vSAM assist, these are both products that customers use solely to back up and recover vSAM data sets in their environment, and we can replace those with this product, with ACM. Okay, so the rear command you can run while the catalog is up and active. So before the customer would have to schedule an outage, they would have to make all the applications that are in that catalog unavailable for the time that they would back up the catalog and then run the reorg. So now they don't have to do that. They can just reorg the catalog. Typically, we tell customers to do it at a time that it's not very active, it certainly can be run at any time. But I think most customers will try to find a time that that the catalog is the least active while they're doing this. But you can run it while production is executing and while applications are using the catalog. With the reorg command, I can do the kinds of changes that we talked about before. I can add space. I can change the CI and CA space. I can add buffers. I can add concurrent access numbers and change the vol SEER. So all of this stuff is supported during reorg. And on slide 16, we've got elapsed times of these reorg executions. I've got records in the catalog, how big they are, pre-reorg CAs and cylinders used, post-reorg CAs and cylinders used, and the total elapsed time. So you can see the elapsed time is very fast on this command. Again, you can do it while the catalog is live. Okay, so why does customer buy a catalog management product? Basically, they buy it for that backup and reorg and forward recovery capability. But these products, including us and our competition in this, they really have just a slew of other types of functions that the customers will also want to use in their environment. The first one here is the diagnosis. Just like the CDSs that we were talking about before, the catalogs can get, quote, messed up, being a technical term there. You can have data sets that are uncatalogued. You can have data sets that are cataloged to the wrong vol SEER. You can just get all kinds of messes out there in the environment, and you really need to once in a while go out there and in the catalog world it's called diagnosing. In the HSM world we called it auditing, but it's basically the same thing. You go out and you run this diagnostic and it compares all the entries on the physical volume in the VVDS towards the catalog or in the catalog towards the VVDS. And then tells you what the disconnects are, what are all the discrepancies. And then in this product, we will also tell you, also give you fixes. So on slide 18, this is a short list here of the kinds of things that we're going to be looking for. Missing aliases, aliases that are related differently. In other words, they're available on some systems and not other systems. Aliases that exist that don't have any entries, user catalogs without any aliases in them. These are things that we're looking for in the master catalog, and then we have diagnoses that are particular for regular catalogs as well. Slide 19, here's another feature of the product. This particular feature, I don't believe that T-Rex has. They have the recover command like we do, where you can recover particular aspects of the catalog, like you can recover GDGs or tape entries, but they don't have a scrub command. At least the last time I looked, they didn't have a scrub command. And this scrub command, this is I showed you this morning, this is something that saved a customer $348,000 on their DR test. Because what it does is it compares the contents of the recovered data to the catalog at the DR site. So you go to DR, you recover a bunch of volumes, you recover data on those volumes, you recover catalogs, and everything's out of sync. Okay? So what this command does is it goes through all the catalogs and all the data that's on the volumes, and it synchronizes it, and it does it really, really fast. If you remember from this morning, it would take this particular company 18 hours to run this command, and with our product, 30 minutes. Okay, so that's a whole bunch of savings there for that company in their DR time. The cat scrub command, you can include and exclude particular things, like I can say I want to exclude migrated data sets, I want to include tape data sets, and so forth. So you have include and exclude capabilities with that scrub command. Here's some timings. One customer had 118 catalogs, 1.8 million records. IDCAMS would take them 15 hours to run this command, and with CatScrub, we did it in 20 minutes. 18 catalogs, 3.1 million records, CatScrub did this in 43 minutes. So significant savings here, especially because when the customers are using this command, they're usually paying a hot site vendor during their 24-hour or 48-hour recovery testing. So every minute counts at a DR test. Slide 22 is the map command. This is another unique feature of ECM. It's not available in any other catalog management product. The map command will map an entire vSAM data set, vSAM KSDS, including catalogs. And it will do things like it will show you insertion patterns. It will tell you whether or not your key compression is poor or not. It will tell you whether or not your index is too small. If you've not defined this vSAM file optimally, it will suggest buffering information for performance. And it will give you any type of errors or warnings on the data in the file. So this is a vSAM, you know, regular vSAM data sets or catalogs. It's a performance tool from the perspective of, as I can map this vSAM data set and I can determine why it's performing badly, or I can get suggestions here on buffering parameters. And, you know, the kinds of things that really kill a vSAM data set, like the index size is too small, can really kill the performance of a vSAM file, and you can get that information with this map command. 23, MergeCat. MergeCat is a feature that is in any catalog management product except ICFRU, and it is the ability to either take two catalogs and merge them together or take one big catalog and split it up into two or more pieces. So that's what the MergeCat feature does. Again, we have the simulate feature. So if I'm new to catalog management and I'm not very comfortable with it, or, you know, maybe I've been around a while and I've done it a bunch of times, but I just want to make sure I've got it set up correctly, I can use the simulate command on this. We also have a fully restartable command, meaning that if I get halfway through and for whatever reason the operator cancels it or whatever happens to it, I can actually pick up from where I started and continue. With IDCAMS, you have to start all over again from the very beginning. And as you can see here, as compared to IDCAMS, IDCAMS took 194 minutes to execute to do this MergeCat, and ACM took only 17 minutes. And one of the significant things about that is that merging catalogs will require the applications to be offline, so this is typically done during a maintenance window, you know, that 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. thing. And if I've got to come in and merge some catalogs, if I'm the catalog person, do you want to be there 194 minutes or 17 minutes? Your choice. Okay, MergeCat copy only will allow you to clone a catalog. Now, why would I ever want to clone a catalog? Well, if I'm going from ZOS 1.8 to ZOS 1.9, I want to create a ZOS 1.9 test environment, and I basically want everything in my 1.8 environment over there in my 1.9 environment, so I'd really like to be able to clone what I have in my current environment. Slide 25, the Explore feature. This is our reporting feature. It seems kind of funny to have a reporting feature in a catalog product, but this was something that Catalog Solutions had. They have a very rich reporting feature, and a lot of our customers or would-be customers were using this feature from EMC. So we had to build a reporting feature in our product as well. So not only do we have the Explore command, we also have a report writer, so you can write your own reports in the format that you'd like to see them in. Slide 26 looks rather crowded, but these are the kinds of things that people can build reports on. So this is various search criteria that customers can select and build and print out their own reports in the format that they'd like to see them in. So lots of things that they can do there with the reporting feature. MQFL, now this showed up in both the advanced reporting and the advanced audit, and it's also in this product as well. So the MQFL feature, again, is an SQL kind of language that just allows you to search through catalogs and collect information and create output that, for example, if you wanted to find out all the data sets that are in your environment that have embed and replicate, and you wanted to take action, you wanted to build a backup and restore command, you could do that with MQFL very easily. Slide 29, volume maintenance. This is an ability to change a vol SEER of a volume without actually moving any data. So today, if I want to change a vol SEER, let's say we're implementing a new naming convention for vol SEERs, or we just bought a new company and their volumes are named similar to ours, so we got to change them, or whatever the reason is, and I want to change the vol SEER. Today I got to move the data off the volume, clip the volume, change the vol SEER, bring it back online, and move the data back on the volume. But with our SuperClip command, you can do this without moving any data. Okay? And we will go out to all of the catalog entries in the VTOC and the VTOC index and update the vol SEER from vol SEER A to vol SEER B or whatever it is that you're changing. And it comes with the simulate command. So you can simulate the whole process before you ever execute it to be sure that that's what you wanted to do and that the results are what you want. Slide 30 just shows the SuperClip command. Again, the command is very consistent and easy to use. 31, the generate command. I can point it to any catalog and generate all the necessary IDCAMS commands to either catalog it, uncatalog it, define it, delete it, whatever I need to do for entries in the catalog. I'm just going to kind of quickly go through here. Cleanup and repair, slide 32, is the alter non-vSAM command. With this command, I can delete, rename, and synchronize data sets that the MVR record is corrupted in some way. A lot of times as a storage administrator, I'd go out to delete a data set off of a volume, but it wouldn't let me delete it because the SMS information was inconsistent with the data on the volume itself. And so, you'd have to go through a series of IDCAMS commands to try to delete the data set, and a lot of times you couldn't delete it at all. You just couldn't get rid of it. And this alter non-vSAM command will fix those problems. Alter sys1vvds. These are for invalid VVDSs. I talked about before that we have a backup and forward recovery for VVDSs. But there's oftentimes where there's errors in the VVDS or the VVDS itself is broken. So alter sys1vvds will allow you to work with those VVDSs that are in trouble. Here's some more alter BCS backpointers, alter BCS device type, alter BCS vol SEER, Again, there's notes on these slides that support what you would be doing with these things, but you know, just kind of gives you an idea of all the various different types of support built into this product beyond just being able to back up and forward recover a catalog. So there's a lot of stuff here that's in this product. The zap command, to be able to go in and zap a catalog entry. This happens more than you'd like it to. And today what I have to do is issue a zap command, you know, all in batch. But what we have provided here is an ISPF interface, if you go to the next slide, to be able to actually view the record. If you go to the following slide, it says ACM zap BCS function. So I can actually view the record and type the change I want to make right here in the panel. And what it will do is build the zap command for me that I would then execute in batch. So this is actually a pretty cool feature of this product. I'm not sure that our competition has laid it out this nicely or not, but this is something that a lot of catalog management people really like this feature. Here's more of that record that I can go in, for example, and change whatever it is I need to change.
The things they like.
Yeah. The CISPRO geeks like me really like this stuff. Yep. Yes. Slide 39, the list SMS command. This is for the, you know, there's always somebody in the data center that comes in at 8 o'clock in the morning, comes over to the SysProg's desk and says, who deleted my data set? You know, and they want to know exactly who did it, what time, and so forth. And so, again, Catalog Solution had this command built in, so we had to support it as well. And what it'll do is it'll report on SMF records towards a particular data set, catalog, record, whatever you're looking for, and it will tell you exactly what happened, who deleted it, or what job deleted it, or whatever it is, based on what's in the SMF record. Again, this product is TEP-enabled. If you go to slide 42, here are some of the TEP screens, 42, 43, both have TEP screens, but you know, there's really a lot more information out there. And as I said at the beginning of this presentation, there's an interface between ACM and XC for storage, and where you can even get more information through this product. But I don't exactly know what that is. So if you're curious about that, you can send me a note, and I will find out from the product manager. Lots of stuff in this product beyond just being able to back up and forward recover catalogs. It's a full catalog management product. It provides, you know, again, diagnostics and repair facilities, reporting facilities. It provides for support for non-ICF catalogs. You know, we can back up and recover regular VSAM data sets. And just do all the altercations and manipulations in catalogs. So it's a catalog management person's dream, and it's certainly superior to Catalog Solution. We do have some feature function that is not in in Dino Software's product T-Rex, who are the main two competitors. So, you know, customers should find our product more appealing. Is catalog integrity important? You better believe it is. Remember, it is a single point of failure in any shop. A catalog breaks, and all applications that reference that catalog go down until that catalog is repaired. Okay, so we can open the phones up for questions again.
And once again, that was star and then one if you have a question at this time. And we have no questions at this time.
Everybody wants to get through this, huh?
Hopefully we still have people on the phone.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, then let's move on to advanced backup and recovery, and maybe we can finish close to 3:30. Okay, so right away, you know, what I usually get is, well, you know, most of my customers are already replicating remotely or they're mirroring remotely, so why do they need a backup and recovery product? Well, the problem is, or the answer is, that replication in any format is not a backup. Replication is replication, which means if I delete the data set at the production site, it's deleted at the remotely mirrored site. If I corrupt the data set, it's corrupted at the remote site. If a programming bug is introduced into the environment and corrupts the file, it's also corrupted at the mirrored site. So replication is a way to get data to the recovery site faster, but it is not a backup. Customers still need a traditional local backup of their data. If you understand production environments like most technical people do, there are a lot more production outages, you know, programming errors, human errors, hardware, software errors in the environment that cause a production application to go down and have to be backed out and restarted after the fix is applied. That happens much more often than a disaster recovery. So backup at the local environment is still a very, very important thing. And from a Sarbanes-Oxley or any compliance perspective, replication and mirroring is not a backup. Customers still need to back up their data. Okay, so let's move on. The different components we're going to talk about today are the automated critical data identification, the critical backup tracking and inventory piece, and the ABARS manager piece. All very important components. The way I understand it is that they can all be sold separately. ACDI, CBTI, and ABM can be sold separately, but for the most part, you're going to want to sell the critical data identification with CBTI and or with ABARS manager. And in a lot of cases, if the customer is a HSM customer, you'll want to sell all three components to that customer. Okay, slide 50, what does ACDI have in it? In a nutshell, what it does is it monitors all the applications that execute in the environment and creates a list of all the critical files. What are the critical files? It's the files that were used as input and the output files that were created from that application's execution. Most customers these days want to be able to back up data, take it to the recovery site, and process forward from that point in time. They don't want to have to rerun their last successful production cycle to recreate the output and then go from there. It takes too much time to do that. So we back up both the input files and the output files so that they can just lay down the data and run the next cycle. The critical backup tracking and inventory piece is going to track all the backups that are happening in the environment. So that's not just the backups that the systems people take, like the full volume dumps and so forth. These are all the backups that the applications people take. Now, if you go to a customer and you talk to the storage administrator and you say to them, well, what kinds of backups are the applications people taking, they won't know. I mean, they might know that they use IDCAMS or they use IEBCopy or IEBGener, but they don't know what it is they're backing up. They don't know when those backups occur, and they don't know if all the data they need are being backed up. Okay, they generally only know about what volumes they're dumping and how frequently they're dumping those volumes. And some folks aren't dumping any volumes at all. They'll just say, well, you know what, that's not my responsibility, that's the applications folks' responsibility, so, you know, don't ask me. So, you know, it depends on the environment, but, you know, most of the time I'm finding that the applications still have responsibility for backing up their application data, and the poor applications folks, you know, they never have the tools that they need to do this job properly. So we're going to provide them with those tools. ABARS Manager, for those of you who don't know, ABARS is a feature of HSM. It is a included component of HSM, meaning that if your customer is an HSM customer, they have ABARS. Now, they may not be using it, but they have the ability to use it, and there are some definite advantages to using ABARS. One is that ABARS is the only data mover that will back up data from primary disk, data from tape, and data that is already migrated to ML1 or ML2 without recalling it. And it will back it up and stack it nicely on one set of output tapes, depending on how big the data is, one tape, two tapes, however much room it needs, as one component. And then I can pick up that what they call an aggregate, take it to my DR site, and then say, recover this aggregate. And all the data gets put back. The data gets put back on primary disk. The data gets put back on tape. It gets put back in migration, and I can go forward from there. No other data mover does this function. Why don't more people use ABARS? First of all, there's a lot of big accounts using ABARS. You may not know about that, but, you know, they use it. And I think that we're probably the biggest, you know, resource for this because we've had this product for a long time and we work with a lot of these big customers. Sprint is one of them. Ford was a big ABARS manager user until recent years. So, you know, there's a lot of big customers using this function. It's a difficult-to-use function without our product. So sometimes when you mention ABARS to them, they might crinkle their nose or make a funny face. But, you know, really with our product, it's very easy to use. We drive the ABARS process under the covers, and the customer ends up really benefiting from this function. Okay, next slide. Let's look at the automated critical data identification piece. Okay, so what this piece does, again, in a nutshell, it's going to monitor all the applications that execute in the environment, and it's going to identify what critical files need to be backed up. So the way that we work this is by the job names in the application. We track all of those jobs that execute. We identify the data by data set name. We create an output data set that has a list of all these data sets that need to be backed up. And then we can, if the customer has ABARS Manager, they can go right into backup and back it up with ABARS Manager, or they could back it up with DFDSS or FDR. But if they use DFDSS or FDR, you can't have any tape data sets or migrated data sets on that list. That's why we want to encourage folks to use ABARS, because a lot of times tape and migrated data end up on that list, and that's the only data mover that that supports it. But if the customer doesn't want to use that and they want to use DFDSS or FDR, you know, they certainly can. Go right ahead. The way that this works is there's an address space that runs in the environment, and it just consistently runs out there. And when jobs are submitted to the internal reader, and it's a job that we're supposed to be tracking, we will collect the SMF and JCL information about that job when it executes. So we will read using the IEF U83 exit the SMF records. And it's dynamic. It happens at the time that the records are cut, not at some time after the batch jobs finish. So it's automatic and dynamic. And we use the IEF UJI exit to read the JCL in its expanded format so we can see everything that it's going to call and all the references of all the data sets in there. Now, why do we look at the JCL and SMF? Because if there's data sets in the JCL that are never opened, no SMF record is cut. But when you go to run that job at the DR site, if that data set that wasn't opened, if it's in the JCL, what happens to the job? It'll go down, data set not found, if you didn't back it up and recover it. Okay? So that's why we need both the SMF data and the JCL data to create a complete picture of everything that's required by that application to run the jobs. I mentioned this before, but most, I mean, I'm saying at least 90% of these ZOS environments have had applications around that were written in the 70s, written in the 80s, and they have this behavior where daily they create an output file, which is read into a weekly, which is then creates a weekly output file, read into a monthly, which creates a monthly output file, read into a quarterly, and then the four quarters are read into the annual processing. Makes sense, right? So in order to recover an application, not only do you have to have the files they need for the next day's processing, but you need the files for the next week or the next month or the next quarter. Statistics show that if a customer has a disaster, they will be running at their disaster recovery site for 3 months. Okay, that means they're going to run weekly processes, monthly processes, and perhaps quarterly processes while they are displaced out of their data center. Okay, so that's important to remember. It's not just yesterday's data that I need. It's not just the data off the full volume dump. I also need data that's probably been migrated, right? When we talked about how old data is, if my data is 2 months old or 3 months old, it's probably in migration, and I better have it at the DR site. Okay. I already covered this, slide 53, how we do the JCL using the IFUJI exit, and how we do the SMF records using the IFU-83 record. 54 is sort of just a pictorial view of applications that are executing in the environment. Applications will execute at various times throughout the 24-hour period. They'll run for various different lengths. Some will be short execution time. Some will be several hours of execution time. So where CDI comes into this is it sits at the end of the application. When the application is done executing, we've created that critical file list, and we can go right into backup at that logical point in time for each application. So you can see here that application A, its backup should start around 2400 hours. Application B, its backup should start at 6 o'clock in the morning. Application C, its backup should start at 4 o'clock in the morning. So you can see how with this type of backup scenario, I can have an individual point in time backup that is applicable to my application. I don't have to try to force all my applications to be done by 4 in the morning so I can get my backups done. I'm going to be able to run a backup that's specific to each application. All right, slide 55 just depicts a multiple CPU environment in which I'm running my address space, my RSP started task on each one of these CPUs. I'm collecting records from each CPU, so it doesn't really matter where the application executes. And then I collect them into my database, and at the end of that application, those records are then written out to an output file, and then that's the input file for backup. Okay, so again, with the CDI, ABARS is the desired backup utility because it can back up data on tape and in migration without recall. But if the customer doesn't want to use ABARS, they can certainly back up the files that are on disk using DFDSS or FDR, or you can just create a list of the files and they can back it up using whatever they have built into their applications. And believe it or not, a lot of the customers want to go this route. They just want a list of the critical files that they should be backing up, and then they want to compare it to what they're actually backing up, what applications is backing up as part of their jobs that they run in production, and then compare those two and find out what aren't they backing up and what are they backing up, you know, too many times or redundantly. And we can do that for them also. So depending on your customer's needs, we have feature and function to support everything that they want to do. Now, Today, if I'm an applications person and I don't have CDI, I more than likely have to write down a list of all of the data sets that I say are critical, and these are the ones I want to back up. Now, you know, 2 months down the road, that list might have changed, but, you know, I've been busy. I've been writing my application or supporting my application. I forgot to add these new data set names to the list. So this is how data centers end up missing data when they go to DR. They just simply forgot to update the list. It's a manual task, and, you know, it's easy to overlook. But with CDI, me as the application person, I don't ever have to worry about maintaining that list anymore because I've got my SMF data and my JCL data to create the list every time the application changes. So if I add a new data set name to my batch job, the CDI product is going to see it and include it in the list and in the backup if I'm doing backup. So I, as the application person, I don't have to worry about maintaining these lists over time, and therefore it's better for the data center because the data center now has an automated way of keeping these lists up to date, and so they're not going to be missing data at the DR site like they used to. And believe me, that's a big problem for these data centers. Okay, slide 58. How do we track or how do we know what to track in the environment? We do it by job name, and we do it with interfaces into the various third-party scheduling software. So CA7, Control-M, ESP, DrobTrack, TWS, and Zeek. They are all supported. The other thing that the customer can do is just say, well, you know, my production jobs start with @PA. So you can go in and say @PA*, and anything that begins with @PA will be tracked by CDI. And then at the end of the application, we run a job, and typically what the customer will do is just add this to the schedule as the last job in the schedule. And this is the job that actually creates the list of critical files. So this is that point in time for that application. We run this job. The program name is BKMAPLEN. And that program creates the output, which then could be used as the input to backup or the list to compare to the backups that the applications people take. Slide 59, filters. When you start looking at applications and backing them up application by application as opposed to vol SEER by vol SEER, you'll find a bunch of data sets that all applications touch. SIS1 data sets, for example, or JCL libraries or control card libraries, and you don't necessarily want every application in your environment backing up those data sets. So we include filters at multiple levels to exclude those data sets from their backup. This way the systems programmers and so forth can control the backup of files that they don't want applications backing up. For example, KIX data sets. KIX data sets will be used a lot by applications within their batch executions, but the SIX pros generally don't want the applications people backing up these files that they use. They want to control that backup at their own point in time. So these filters are used to do those kinds of things. We're going to skip forward to 61, another pictorial view of CDI here. So to make CDI work, what I need to do is feed it job names. So I'm either going to use the customer's third-party scheduling system, or I'm going to provide a mask like @PA*. And in that identification into CDI, I'm going to do what's called a job collector. I'm going to collect a list of jobs or the mask name for CDI to track. And then at the end of the application, I'm going to put into production a batch job with a program in it called BKMAP-LEN that executes at the end of the cycle, every time the cycle executes, and that's what's going to actually create that critical file list that I'm then going to feed into backup. And in a nutshell, that's the whole product right here, okay? So I'm tracking their jobs. I'm identifying all of the data sets that were touched by the application through SMF records and through the JCL, and then I'm creating an output list, okay? And that's what this product does. And it does it every single time the application executes so that if I add a brand new job name or I add a brand new data set, that's okay. I don't have to worry about it because it's now automated. Okay?
So it actually doesn't do the backup or the recovery. All it does is provide a list of data sets to some utility that's going to do the backup for you.
Correct. So the question is, it doesn't actually do the backup. All it does is provide the list to some utility that's going to do the backup, and that is correct. So if the customer also buys ABARS Manager, then the backup can be automated with ABARS Manager. So right as soon as I create that list, the very next step could do the backup. But if the customer chooses, for example, to use DFDSS or something else to back it up, they have to build their own JCL and put that into the process right there. Or they might choose to just create the list because they already have backups built into their batch application.
These are separately priced components.
The question is, are these separately priced components? And the answer is yes. CDI, ABARS Manager, and the other one, what did we call it, BTI or CBTI, are all separately priced components under the ZOS Backup and Recovery Manager blanket. Okay, let's move on to CBTI. Critical Backup Tracking Inventory. Now, this is the piece I mentioned before. I probably didn't name it correctly because I have a little bit of trouble with how IBM named these products, and they're different from MainStar's names, which I'm used to. So, anyway, CBTI is a very important piece, and it's a piece that no other vendor offers. So this piece differentiates us from all other competition, okay? DRVFI, or you might have heard it pronounced Dr. Viffy, does not have this piece, okay? So this is the huge differentiator in our product offering. And what does it do? I mentioned before that customers may want to do their own backups, like they already have backups in place, and in fact, this is just more common than I like it to be. They have backups that are built into their batch application, and, you know, the storage administrator says, hey, you know, backups are not my responsibility, it's the applications people's responsibility, and the applications people tell the storage administrators, yeah, we're backing up everything we need, and then they get to the DR site and they can't recover, okay, and the storage people are pointing their fingers at the applications people, and the applications people are pointing their fingers back at the storage people, right? Well, this product solves this problem. So this is a very important piece, and every one of your customers should have this product. What it does is it tracks every single backup that occurs in the environment. So if they're using ABARS Manager, they track those backups. If the systems people are dumping the volumes once a week, we track those backups. HSM is taking backups. We track those backups. Applications is taking backups. They're using IDCAMS, IEB Copy, IEB Jenner, CA Favor. They're using all this kind of stuff to back up their data sets. We track those backups. So it's the first product that gives a complete inventory of all backups that are happening in the environment, not just the ones that are created by the software, not just the ones that are created by systems people, but every backup in the environment, okay? And this is significant because this is the first time that customers have a picture a view of everything backup-wise that's happening in their environment. They don't get this any other way. And it's fantastic information because, number one, it points out data that's being backed up redundantly. Data set A is being backed up 15 different times because application over here, the parts people and that, you know, that are working on application parts don't know that sales and distribution is backing up this file too. And they don't know that, you know, that this other application is backing up this file too. And so backups are just occurring all over the place at various different times. And probably 90% of those cannot be used for DR in any way. Okay? So that's one of the things it does. Number two, I can take the list of critical files that I created out of CBI, and I can compare it to the inventory I've created out of critical backing, tracking, and inventory. And I can see, are all the critical data sets that are on this list backed up, yes or no? And if the answer is no, which when you first bring this product into environments, you'll find a lot of no's out there, then you can tell the customer, look, you're not backing up these data sets. These are critical files that you're going to need for recovery. Oh, yeah, they'll say, man, I forgot to add that to the list. Or I forgot to build a backup for that. Or, oh, yeah, I didn't realize that's one that needed to be backed up. And, you know, this is why recovery often fails for these customers because they don't have a product that shows them what they're missing.
I'm curious how it does this.
So the question is, well, how does that work, Colleen? Well, I'm going to show you. Let's see. Okay. Go to slide 65 and then go the first slide beyond that, 66. This is a view of CBTI tracking all the full volume dumps. So what we do is there's another address space that lives out there, okay? And we have to identify to the address space. You can see here that these dumps, the job names are ADT and P390, right? So I tell this product, track jobs ADT asterisk, and this one happens to be an HSM auto dump, okay? And I also want you to track P390, and the program I want you to track is ADRDSSU because that's what DFDSS uses to back up data, okay? And I put those into this product, and from that point forward, the product will track all jobs called P390 anything that execute ADRDSSU. Now, let's say I didn't know if it's FDR or ADRDSSU, or maybe I use a variety of backup products. So I can say track P390 asterisk that's using ADRDSSU or FDR or CA Favor or IEB Copy or IEB Generator. I can put all the utilities in there, or I can asterisk in that utilities field. So any job that's called P3 anything that's using any one of these data movers will be tracked. Okay? So I can get as granular or as generic as I need to according to what I want tracked in my environment. All right? Now, I do have a panel, I think, in a minute where I actually show you the entry panel where you put in the job names and you put in the utilities to track. On slide 67, I'm just showing you here, I can now see the data sets that were backed up. So let's say I have a full volume dump, but I have no idea what data sets were on that dump. I can just come to the panel here, and I can view all the data set names that were on that full volume dump. And I can recover one or more data sets from that full volume dump, okay? Or let's say HSM backed it up or somebody else backed it up. I can view all the available backups for a particular data set name or, you know, data set name mask, and I can pick and choose which backup copy I want to recover from, because maybe the applications person says, well, I need a recovery from a backup that was done 2 weeks ago, because that was before this problem was introduced into the application. Or I need a backup from 2 nights ago around midnight. So you can pick and choose which backup more closely gives the applications or whoever it is that's asking for it that that copy of the file. Okay. So right here on 67 is basically all the data sets that are in this HSM auto dump. And I'm typing the letter I right here next to this first data set. And when I press enter, I'm just going to get all the information about that data set that's on that volume. And the kinds of information that I'm going to get, I don't have the slide on it, but it's everything. It's like all the allocation information, how big it is, what volume it was on, and we collect this from the VTOC and VVDS in the environment. So this isn't something that any normal backup utility is going to give you. We're giving this to you because we're collecting it from the environment. Okay. Here's on slide 68 is the data movers that we're supporting. CA Favor has also been added to the list, and VSAM Assist, I believe, is also supported, but I'd have to double check on that one. Favor is by far more popular, so and we do have some customers that bought this product that were Favor users, so I know for sure that that's on the list. Now, if a customer, sometimes customers have built their own flavor of a data mover, we can support that. Once the customer buys the product, we can work with them for adding support for that into the product. What you won't see on here is CA Disk. We do not support CA Disk right now, and I don't know if we have plans to do so or will be doing so, because we at our development lab do not have the product in-house to build the interface. If we get a customer who's a CA Disk customer, we can build the interface with them. But at this point, we really haven't run into any CA Disk users who are interested in this product. So that is not on the list. We also track I should have changed the slide, but the advanced catalog management backups. So all my catalog backups I track in here. All the ABARS manager backups I track in here. So I really do have a really good inventory of all the backups that are happening in the environment. Okay, so tracking and inventorying are the main functions of this product. Again, it's bringing information to the data center that they've never been able to collect before. It shows me redundant backups. It shows me data that isn't being backed up. It would also show me all backup copies of a particular data set. We were talking earlier that I have a customer who has a requirement that if they're going to expire a data set, they also have to expire all copies of that data set at the same time. It's an actual government regulation that they have to meet. So this product will allow them to see all copies of that file and make sure that all that data expires at the same time. Plus, they can provide auditors reports that show all the copies of that file and that they will all be expired at the same time. So from an auditing perspective, it's an excellent product. Some customers have told us from a Sarbanes-Oxley perspective that they have to prove all their critical data is backed up. Here we go. This product right here will show them all the critical data and where it's all backed up. Okay, we'll produce reports that show exactly that information. Okay, and here's the slide I promised you. This is slide 70, and this is how I actually tell the product what to track. So I have jobs that begin with ASTBJ, and I have it doesn't matter what they end with after that. And I have told them, I have said if they're executing any of these utilities, I want to track them. Now, again, I can put an asterisk there, which would mean it would track all utilities that the product supports. Okay, or I can be more granular and I can say specifically FDR ABR, IEB Jenner, ID CAMS, you know, so it's up to the customer how they want to implement this. So again, by job name and then by the utility name. And that's all there is to the setup. Now, you'll also notice here that there's a job step and a proc step. So I can't even get more granular and say, I only want you to track it if it's in this job or this proc. It's a feature, it's there, but, you know, I haven't run into a customer that needs to be that granular. Okay, it's going to record volunteer information, date and time stamps, all the backup information, the size of the data set, the allocation information, because you can actually recover data from the panels here. I can recover vSAN data sets, and it knows exactly what IDCAMS parameters to define it with. I can recover data off a full volume dump out of HSM. So not only does it track things, it also recovers. So you can see how this could be a very important tool from a local recovery perspective, right? I can back up, I can see all the backups that are available, and I can recover without having to know, number one, what utility backed it up, and not having to know what parameters I need to use to allocate that data set, because it's all in the product for me. So if I'm the production services and I've got an admin and I call the applications person at home at 3 o'clock in the morning, because it always happens at 3 o'clock, hey, you know, this job went down, we have a backup of the file, and I can recover it right here. I mean, what is that worth, right? Rather than that applications person having to drive in, run the recovery JCL to recover that file, and then start processing again. So it's very important information. It's easily found in the panels, not only for the for applications people, but for SysPros, for operations staff, anybody who needs to get at it. Can this be used as a DR tool? Of course it can. But the main intent for it is your local recovery tool. Okay? That's the main purpose for it. But it certainly can be used for DR. And most of our customers, before they went with mirroring and replication and so forth, were using it for DR. Okay? But now in this new environment where they're replicating and all that, you know, your sales pitch is, this is a local recovery tool, okay? Now, if you've got a customer that's not interested in doing mirroring, they can't afford it, or let's say they're interested in doing mirroring, but they only want to mirror certain applications or certain amounts of data, you can tell them exactly with this tool what makes up their application, where do those files reside. So if they're going to mirror this application, they have to mirror all of these volunteers, okay, or storage groups, for example. Or they can back it up with this and save some money. So depending on the RTOs and so forth of each application, they can make a decision. Am I going to replicate this data, or am I going to back it up with this product? And I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to go rather quickly on slide 73. This is a view data set detail, and I told you before that we collect information from the environment, so you can see here how big the data set is, what volunteer it's on, what was the management class information, was it on disk, was it on tape, you know, all the information about that file I can get in the product. Again, slide 74, I can recover right from the product. On 75, I can search for a data set name. And on 76, it builds the recovery JCL, and I don't need to know, was it backed up with Jenner or Copy or IDCAMS. It will just do it for me, create the JCL for me. All I have to do is submit it. Reporting. I've got a slew of reports here. I won't go through the list here. We touched on many of them, but I think the most important is, what is critical and where is it backed up? Or what is critical and what isn't backed up. We provide all of that type of reporting within this product. And let's skip forward. I want to talk about ABARS Manager, so let's go to slide 83. Now, I've touched on why ABARS is important. It's the only data mover that supports disk, tape, and migrated data without recall, okay? So ABARS Manager is basically the backup component of this solution. So I've got my critical file tracking software. I've got my inventory software. This piece actually does the backup. Now, again, the customer can choose not to use this piece. They want to use some other kind of backup utility. But if they choose to use this piece, it's more automated. So CBI creates that output data set that says these are all the critical files, and ABARS Manager does the backup. And it does it in one nice, neat package. All of the disk data sets, the tape data sets, and the migrated data sets are all included in this package. It stacks all the files neatly onto the output, whether that's one or two tapes or more, depending on the size of the application, and you're done. And to recover that data, you just go straight to the panel and you say, recover. Recover this application, and it's all handled in the background. It's using ABARS. It's actually submitting ABARS commands, but the customer doesn't have to know that information because the product sits on top of ABARS. Let's skip to 87. So it's a pictorial view here on 87. Basically, I'm getting my list of data sets to back up from CDI. As I mentioned, ABARS Manager sits right on top of ABARS. ABARS is a function of HSM that all HSM customers have, and it will do the backup and create an output file. The output file can then be stored in a vault, taken to the DR site, and you can say recover. It's recover the aggregate name, press enter. You go through our panels, you just type in R next to that application and press enter. And it takes all the data that was backed up, and if it was disk data, it puts it back on disk. If it was tape data, it puts it back on tape. And if it was in migration, it returns it to migration. It also catalogs everything and rebuilds the CDS entries. So if those things aren't there for any reason, it will recreate them. Let's see. Let's look at some of these panels on slide 89. Again, this looks just like the other panels, so, and they all come in the same master menu, so it's all integrated, and I can see all the information about my backups, how many data sets, how big they are. The next panel, I can see things like return codes, if I have bad return codes from DFDSS. And by the way, ABARS is just DFDSS. It's got a little bit of HSM code in there that allows it to back up data from tape and from migration, but the bulk of it is regular old DFDSS, and the output from the ABARS backup looks just like DFDSS because that's what's doing the backup, okay? So, you know, everybody's familiar with DFDSS out there and will, you know, be able to read those output sysouts and so forth. Again, just like with the inventory and tracking, I can search for particular data sets and recover individual data sets or groups of data sets. On slide 92, I show that panel where I've searched for RRO2 $BRM, and I got a list here of all of the data sets that match that mask and where and what the backup is. ABARS Manager also records HSM backups. So I can select whether I want to recover it from HSM or from an ABARS backup. Incremental backup. Now, I don't know if most of you are familiar that I can do, with DFDSS, I can do a full volume dump, and then I can do incremental dumps throughout the week of data that's changed. Well, we brought that feature to ABARS. If you remember from our conversation earlier, applications typically have that daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly type behavior. So if you advance to slide 95, I kind of have a monthly view here of what that looks like. And so every single day I have an output data set called A.daily that's being created that's input to my weekly process, and my weekly process creates an output data set called B.weekly. And B.weekly is created every week and read into my monthly process, and that creates an output data set called C.monthly. Well, if you see this grayed out box here during the second week, that's when my disaster strikes, okay? So tell me, what do I need to recover? I need to recover the prior days, ADOT daily from Wednesday, Tuesday, and Monday, and I need the previous week's output data set called BDOT weekly, right? And I need that so that when I run my monthly process, I have all 4 weeks of my monthly, of my weeklies to be read into my monthly. So what the incremental piece does is it allows me to track these, to back up and treat these applications by their cyclical nature. So I can begin my incremental process on Monday for my daily and end it on Thursday, and I can begin my weekly process on Friday and end it on the last Friday of the month. And what it will do is it will back up, it'll back up all the files on Monday, it'll back up everything in that application. But on Tuesday, it's only going to back up things that are new or have changed. So it actually reduces the size of my backup, but it also allows me to recover all the data that I need for the entire week. So ADOT weekly or ADOT daily will get backed up every single day. Okay, but other files that are part of that application that haven't changed won't be repetitively backed up. So when I get to the recovery site, all I have to say again is recover this application. And the ABARS manager will go out and figure out where everything is, most current version of all of the data sets, and start mounting the tapes and recovering the data. And so when I've recovered with ABARS manager, I have all 4 of my ADOT dailies, and I have my BDOT weekly recovered from the previous week. I don't even have to do anything to make that happen other than to say recover. Okay? It's great because these are things that, from a production and application perspective, these are the kinds of things that trip people up when they go to recover. They're missing that BDOT weekly file from the week before. Or they only recovered from last weekend. You know, they did full volume dumps before their DR test last weekend, and so all they have is the BDOT weekly from the week before, and they don't have the prior 3 days of ADOT daily. Okay? I know that was a mouthful, so I hope that was somewhat understandable. Load balancer is just a way to take a large amount of data that I want to back up and balance it into several concurrent tasks so I can get it done faster. This is a pictorial view of doing that. Cat scrub, we talked about this in the catalog product. This is also a feature of ABARS Manager or the inventory and tracking. So it is a DR feature. I want to be able to scrub my catalogs and have them in sync with the data I've recovered. So we put that component in this product as well. There's lots of reports that are available with ABARS Manager. This particular report that I'm showing on slide 100 is all of the backup copies I have of a particular aggregate. So in summary, the ABARS Manager solution provides something very unique to customers. It provides them the ability to create an aggregate group or a collection of all data that belongs to an application, whether it lives on disk, tape, or in migration. And it provides a very simple way to do backup and recovery that's as automated as possible. And doesn't require the recovery folks or even the backup folks to know anything about ABARS. Basically, it's using ADRDS issue under the covers, which is DFDSS. They're already familiar with that. Most sites are doing their full volume dumps with that or FDR or both. And, you know, it's nothing new. It's nothing mysterious to them. So 102 has all 3 components. ACDI, the automated critical data identification that tells you what needs to be backed up. Critical backup tracking tells you if it is backed up and what isn't backed up. Also provides for recovery. And ABARS Manager is that more automated way of backing up all the data that belongs to the application and easily recovering it. Okay. I know I'm 20 minutes late here, but you know, that's not too bad. So let's go ahead and open the lines up for any questions.
And once again, that was star and then one if you have a question at this time.
Okay, there's one thing I wasn't sure of. You mentioned that data identification, the backup tracking, And the APARS manager were three separately priced components.
Correct.
I think that might be just when you get it from MainStar. We only have one product code in IBM that I know of.
Right. If you heard Bruce complaining about that earlier, there is one product code for backup and recovery for ZOS, but then there are sub-codes. I don't know what they look like. I might have had them on a different slide, feature codes or something, to order each individual piece. So, and you have to provide both when you're ordering this product. So Bruce Hawkinson can help you with that. Also, I have in the slide deck the guy from Icing, Bob Teeter, who put all of this together. He can help you with that. But they are separately, you can buy, for example, the CBI and the tracking feature without the ABARS manager piece. Because not all customers have HSM. If they don't have HSM, they can't use ABARS manager. So they are separately priced. Now, it makes sense, again, if they're an HSM customer, you sell them all three. If they're not an HSM customer, you want to sell them CBI and the inventory and tracking piece. Okay, so usually they're going to buy two of the three consistently. But if they're HSM customer, sell them all three.
Cool.
Okay?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
We have no questions over the phone lines at this time.
Okay. I just wanted to mention that at the back of this presentation, I included some slides from Max's presentation. I believe he gave this sometime in either January or December, and it kind of just categorizes products and gives some additional sales information. So I just put them in here. It's got some information on slide 109 about the CDPO and the SMPO. And that's just FYI for you. And thank you very much for sticking with us throughout the day. And any questions, my email address is Colleen G, C-O-L-L-E-E-N-G, at Mainstar, MAINSTAR.com. Send me your questions, your needs, your wants, your wishes, and I will see what I can do about getting those things answered and back to you. Okay, Di?
I think we're good. And same goes with me. If you have any questions, give me a call. It's Doug Gibbs, and I'm in the Austin office. Other than that, I have to say thank you, Colleen. And hope you all have a great weekend. I guess that's it. So we'll sign off.
And once again,
how do you say that in Rome?
Oh, I don't
know.
Ciao.
Okay. And once again, that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. Have a great day.